What do you think of when you hear the phrase social justice? For some of you, it gets you excited. For some of us, it can be a little make you nervous. For some, it makes us angry. There's a lot of responses when we hear that phrase, social justice. Well, two nights ago, the city of Memphis released a video footage of the arrest and beating of Tyre Nichols. Now, we're not going to go into all speculation or anything about that, but here's what we know. Mr. Nichols was pulled over on January 8th for what police said was reckless driving. There was an initial confrontation with Mr. Nichols and several officers in which the officers were cursing him, were pulling him out of the vehicle. They were yelling multiple conflicting commands. If you haven't seen the video, they were just yelling, some saying get down, some saying put your hands behind your back, some saying put your hands on your... I mean, it was chaos. It was absolute chaos. And Nichols was saying, okay, 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 and he was acting like he was complying, but he became just evidently scared for his life. He takes off running, and the officers chased him down. They caught up to him about 100 yards from his family home. They subdued him. They caught him. They subdued him. They handcuffed him, hands behind his back, and they proceeded subsequently to beat him to death. Now, all of this was captured on camera, that he was unconscious and subdued, and the beating continued for some time. Now, before 3 days ago, I'd never heard the name of Tyre Nichols. I knew nothing about the situation surrounding his death. In fact, the very first time I believe I heard his name was earlier this week on Wednesday, and that was because there was a statement released from his mother, who, knowing the video was going to be released the following day, came out asking for, if there's going to be protests, for them to abstain from violence, a very tearful plea from his mother to abstain from violence. And I've been pulled over a few times in my life, more than I'd care to admit in public. I've been pulled over a few times in my life, and I never once in all of my life was I ever fearful for my life in a traffic stop. Now, watching that video, and I was unable to watch all of it. I just couldn't bring myself to do it, but watching the early parts of this traffic stop of Tyre Nichols, I could not help but think how scared and powerless I would feel in his situation. And I'm not saying I would have run away in that situation, but if I was fearful for my life, I might have, right? And there's been a lot of response to this. There's been protests, most of which have been largely peaceful. But I wanted us to think this morning, what can we do, right? What should we do? Is there a Christian response to social injustice? And if so, what should a Christian response to social justice be, if anything? Right now, all around us are people who feel on a regular basis just like Tyre Nichols felt that night. Some people, more than we would care to admit, are stuck in abusive relationships. Children in homes of neglect or abuse. Just horrible situations right here in Coffee County. There are people who go to work and work every day at least 40 hours a week, but they cannot afford both rent and food, and certainly not health care. There are seniors who have worked their whole lives and now living on Social Security who cannot afford regular life expenses plus medication, right? That exists right here in Coffee County. There are parents in our world, and I think especially of the parents in South American and Central American countries, who live every day in fear that their children are going to be forced into prostitution. Their 8, 9, 10-year-old children taken from them and forced into prostitution. There are parents in our own country who willingly sell their children into prostitution to fund their addictions. All of this happens right here, even in Coffee County. So what are we supposed to do about it? Do we, as Christians, have an obligation to help our fellow man have access to good education or good health care? Should everybody have the opportunity to a living wage or equal opportunity employment, regardless of their social standing or their race or their ethnicity? And as we continue thinking this morning about our rule of life, right, our patterns that we live by, the habits that we practice on a daily basis, one of the things that we have to incorporate is a Christian response to inequality. It is a heart for social justice. Now, weeks ago, long before I'd ever heard the name Tyre Nichols, and even earlier this week, this was already the plan, was to think about social justice and our habits, and it just coincided with the release of this video when the idea of social justice is already sort of in the national conversation. And it made me think about the prophet Amos. Now, Amos was not born a prophet. Amos was just a country farmer. He was just a guy living an ordinary life, just kind of like you and I. He was just a worker, right? And he was sent by God into these big cities that he knew nothing about, talking to people that he didn't understand their way of life. And he goes in there and he goes in and tells them in no uncertain terms that these very religious people, that their sacrifices and their ceremonies and their prayers and their religion were all insufficient for a life with God. He insisted that social righteousness, that is, justice in the social realm, was absolutely essential to a life with God. That's what Amos said. This is what he says, Amos chapter 2, verses 6 through 8. For this is what the Lord says, for three sins of Israel, even for four, I will not relent. They sell the innocent for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals. They trample on the heads of the poor as on the dust of the ground and deny justice to the oppressed. Father and son use the same girl and so profane my holy name. They lie down beside every altar on garments taken in pledge. In the house of their God, they drink wine taken as fines. Now, we read this, and maybe you've even read this passage before if you've gone through the minor prophets, but all this we've kind of got a big chasm between us and this passage. We've got a big distance of time and culture that makes understanding what's going on here a little bit difficult. So I'm going to back up and we're going to talk about some of these phrases as they crop up. He talks about selling the needy for a pair of sandals. Okay, this is creditors. You come to me, you borrow money, right? And so you owe me money, you can't pay me back the money. It doesn't matter how little the money is. Even if the money you owe me is so small, it could only buy a pair of sandals, I'll sell you into slavery for not paying it back. That's what he's talking about, selling the needy for a pair of sandals. They trample the poor into dust. This is the power brokers. It's the powerful people of the day who use brutal, callous oppression over those who are beneath them because they do not have power or influence. It's treating people lesser than you as lesser than you, as just as insignificant as the dust beneath your feet. Something happens to them, who cares? Father and son lying down with the same girl. And we think, well, that obviously is a sin, right? That's not great. But what he's talking about here in the social justice realm is fathers taking advantage of a woman's inability in their society to stand up for their own rights. This woman couldn't say anything because here is the head of the household, the father figure, the father of her husband, and he comes in because of this power, forcing their daughters-in-law into, we'll just say on a Sunday morning, morally compromising situations. They lay down with garments taken in pledge. And again, this is the wealthy exploiting the destitute by refusing to return a coat that was taken in pledge. Okay, you need to borrow some money to buy food or to fix your house or whatever, and you're like, I promise I'll pay it back. You can keep my coat. You can keep my coat as a promise. I will take it back. I mean, that I will pay you back the money. And then the end of the day comes, and you haven't brought me the money back. And so what the wealthy would do is they would not return the coat. Even though it's cold and you don't have a bed, you don't have covers to cover up with, and those desert nights get pretty chilly, just not returning the coat. I'll throw it down and I'll use it for myself as well. I don't need it, but I got it. You need it, but who cares? They drink wine bought with fines. Kangaroo courts assessing exorbitant fines for whatever offenses. Big, big fines. And then taking the money from these big, big fines and just having a party. I mean, it's not trying to bring restitution. Not trying to fix what had gone wrong that brought about the fines. Just taking all the money and let's just have a big party with it. And we'll enjoy it ourselves. So Amos, he talks about all this. He talks about a lot of other things that really I wish we had more time on a Sunday morning to go through the book of Amos and address some of his issues, because some of them eerily echo things that are happening in our world today. Amos repudiated and condemned these abuses of their society, abuses of power, abuses that allowed the elite of their society to crush the poor, to oppress the needy. And then it is important for us here today in Manchester, Coffee County, Tennessee, to hear these words from Amos, because it is important for us to know how much God cares about injustice, and not just justice in the general sense, in the criminal sense, but justice in the business world, justice in the social arenas of our world. Sometimes, especially we as Christians, can get really confused and think God only cares about religious stuff, right? The way we worship, or maybe moral issues. Just don't do these bad things morally. Don't sleep with people you're not married to. Don't take the name of God in vain. And we think that God is only concerned about that, but the book of Amos smacks all of that in the face and says, absolutely not. God is cares about the way you carry out justice in every realm of your world. According to N.T. Wright in his book, Simply Christian, which is a great book if you've not read it, Simply Christian by N.T. Wright, and he says that we long for justice. It's like part of being a human. He says it comes with a kit of being human. If you are a human being without a dead heart, then you long for justice. And even though all of the world, billions of people throughout hundreds of years, thousands of years now, have longed for justice, we never really achieve it. Isn't that true? There has never been a point in American society where it's been justice for everyone. And before us, there was never one in British society or French society or German or African or South American or Asian. There's never been a point in the history of humanity, even though everybody wants justice, everybody wants the wrongs of the world to be righted, there's never been a time we've been able to make it happen. N.T. Wright goes on to say, you fall off your bicycle, you break your leg. You go to hospital, they fix it. You go around on crutches for a while, then really gingerly you start to walk normally again. There is such thing as putting something to rights, as in fixing it, as in getting back on track. You can fix a broken leg, a broken toy, a broken television. So why can't we fix injustice? It's not for a lack of trying. And even though all of these failures we've had to fix the injustices, we just keep dreaming about the day, one day, when everything's going to be made right, one day when all the injustices are going to be taken away. One day when everybody is treated fair and equitably and equally, God describes himself as the defender of the vulnerable. He says, I'm father to the fatherless. I'm the defender of the widow. And in other places, he talks about being a caretaker to the poor, or for the weak and for the needy. How God takes care of the vulnerable people. And so he says, I have instilled that in you. We should all have a strong concern for the poor and the weak and the needy, for the fatherless and the widow. But there is more to the biblical idea of justice than just, oh, I wish it was better for those folks. Justice is not pity. Justice is not feeling sorry for other people. Justice is linked to the biblical idea of righteousness. So inextricably linked that it is the exact same word in Hebrew. Justice and righteousness. There's a couple of different Hebrew words. Predominantly this word called mishpat, we're not even going to talk about that one, but that's the one that's most commonly used for the word justice or righteous. When you're reading through your Bible and you come to the word justice or righteousness in your King James or NIV or whatever version you're reading, you come across that word in the Old Testament, more than likely it's the word mishpat, and it's used interchangeably. You kind of pick up on the context clues as to how it's interpreted, but it's the same word. There's another word that's being used that describes both justice and righteousness, tzedakah. I know. You're wondering what you have a child on the way. You're trying to pick a good name. Anyway, it refers also to either justice or righteousness, but really they don't have an either or. It's both. But it's a life of right relationship. So when most modern people like us, we're reading the Bible, and we come to the word like righteousness in the Bible, we think in terms of private morality, you know, sexually chaste and diligent in our prayers or in our Bible study, you know, private, personal righteousness. But in the Bible, this particular Hebrew word refers to day-to-day living, like how you go about your business, how you pay your bills, how you treat your spouse and your kids, how you are at work, what kind of neighbor are you, how are you in your community. It's all about right relationships with everyone. Are you fair? Are you generous? Are you equitable? Are you treating black people the same as you treat white people, the same as you treat Hispanic people? Are you treating immigrants the same as you treat people who are born in your country? People who speak English the same as those who speak Spanish or those who speak Arabic? Are you treating people who are poor as well as you're treating the rich? Men as well as women, as well as kids, as well as the aged? Are you treating everybody fair and equitably? And when we fail to do that, when we fail to live fairly and generously and equitably in our social situations, there are consequences, not just in our society, but there are consequences with God. That's what the book of Amos is about. This is what he says later in the book of Amos, chapter 5. He says, God, this is quoting God from Amos. He says, I hate. Now, that's a strong word, but this is what God says. I hate, I despise your religious festivals. Your assemblies are a stench to me. Even though you bring me burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. Pause, time out. Why is God so mad? Is it because they're not following the right religious holidays? Is it because they're bringing the wrong things? No, there's zero indication. They are having the right religious holidays and doing the right things on those right religious holidays. They're bringing the right offerings. You're supposed to bring a grain offering. They're bringing grain offerings. You're supposed to bring a burnt offering. They're bringing burnt offerings. They're bringing the best. In fact, he later, as we continue to go on, he says, though you bring choice fellowship offerings. In other words, you're bringing me the best. You're putting in work here, bringing me choice fellowship offerings. I will have no regard for them. Away with the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the music of your harps. And if you grew up in Church of Christ like me, you knew this is a great quotation to use as why we should not have harps in the assemblies. But that is not what it's talking about at all. In fact, it's really the opposite. When I found that out, I was so mad that I had used that in arguments. God is not saying I'm mad that you use harps. He's saying it's great, it's fantastic, but it means nothing to me because of the way you're living socially. He goes on to say, but let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream. Same word, justice and righteousness. The reason those things are bad is not because you shouldn't make burnt offerings or grain offerings or choice fellowship offerings or religious festivals or because you shouldn't have harps or music or songs. They're not wrong in and of themselves. They're wrong because you're doing that while you let injustice rule your society. You are living injustice and unjustly. And what Amos is driving, he said, our relationship with God cannot ever be right unless we are also right in the way we treat our fellow man. And if the Forest Mill Church of Christ gets nothing else right in our community, we have to make sure we understand this, that our relationship with God can never be right unless we are also right in the way we treat our fellow man. And here's the amazing thing, because we've got a really diverse crowd here this morning. We have different backgrounds. We have different interests. We live in different worlds. We have different social spheres. The amazing thing is the injustices that you come across and that you are able to spot are really different from the ones that I'm going to come across and I'm able to spot. We're all going to be attuned to different areas and better able to see when something's out of place here. If I walk into my house and all of a sudden my fridge is on this wall instead of that wall, I'm going to spot it right off. Whereas if you are visiting my house for the first time, you have no idea that the fridge is supposed to be over here instead of over there. Does that make sense? It's my house. I see when something's out of place. And when you go out into the world, you may spot right off when something is wrong and out of place in this particular sphere. Maybe you are really attuned to the sphere of immigrants. And my wife was talking about the larger percentage every year of English language learning students that she has in her school. And so she really sees that quickly, maybe much more quickly than some of the rest of us. Maybe you are really attuned to the issues of those in need of health care, if you've got some background in the healthcare industry and you want to do something about that. Maybe you are really attuned to the issues facing seniors while we've got rising inflation, right? Maybe that really jumps out at you and you're able to see what's going on in that particular sphere. Maybe you really see it with civil servants, whether it's teachers or law enforcement officers or people who are living under conditions that are just not right, not fair. You're quick to see when someone is this particular type of person is mistreated or when the poor are really going without. Maybe you see the great difficulties that are weighing down on employees of certain companies where the companies are taking advantage of their employees. Or maybe you really notice it when it happens in civil service areas. But as we are striving to live entire, full, complete, whole lives as Christians, to walk in the footsteps of Christ, if we are wanting to live like Him, we cannot just confine ourselves to the religious world. That is not what Jesus did, and it's what not what we are called to do. It is not what His followers did, and we're walking in their footsteps as well. As we are developing our rule of life, crafting what sort of habits and patterns we need to have in our lives, social justice needs to be interwoven there. And maybe it's building ramps for those who are going without because they don't have the funds to do that. Years ago, as a youth minister, we were trying to find something for our teens to do in the summer, and we noticed that lots of people live in wooden houses, and some of them didn't have the funds to get them painted. That paint was flaking off, looked terrible, and not only that, it was going to lead to the degradation of the home. So we just thought we could do something with that. With a bunch of teens who have no skill, you can get them to teach them to paint a house. And so we did that for a few summers, and we thought that was grand. But maybe that wouldn't jump out to you at all. You just didn't notice that. We need to have our eyes attuned to injustice wherever it may be in our world. Single moms, elderly adults, those who are living in conditions that are less than desirable, those who are being mistreated by the system of law. They're out there. And as Christians, it is our duty to stand up for those who are being oppressed, to defend the rights of the fatherless and the widow, the poor and the needy. And this morning, if you need help with that, if you're ready to commit your life to a God who loves people, all people, with this strong, burning desire, regardless of social circumstances, ready to live life under that rule and in that kingdom, and want to become a child of His. If we can help you in any way, won't you come now as we stand and as we sing?